everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Today we have a very special guest. I've invited Laura Cortez to join us. Laura is an organizer and a co-executive director of East Yard Communities for Environmental Justice, and also works as a Spanish-English interpreter. She grew up in Bell Gardens, a small city in southeast Los Angeles County. East Yard Communities for Environmental Justice, East Yard for short, is an environmental health and justice nonprofit. Their mission is to work towards a safe and healthy environment for communities that are disproportionately suffering from the negative impacts of industrial pollution. A lot of their work focuses on East Los Angeles, Southeast LA, and Long Beach. I met Laura while I was working with East Yard. I have learned so much from Laura as an organizer, from reaching out to elected leaders to establishing meaningful connections with community members and residents. Everyone at East Yard does amazing work and is involved in many, many projects. But you in particular, I see you everywhere. I've seen your Google calendar. You are here and there. I remember when I was working at East Yard, when I was working with Jasmine, my co-team member, shout out to Jasmine. Whenever we were stuck and thinking of next steps, we'd like to say, what would Laura do? And if you live in LA County, specifically East LA, Southeast LA, Long Beach, you most likely have benefited from a project or work that Laura and East Yard have done. So when I was thinking about doing this podcast and who I want to highlight from the community, you were the first person that popped into my head. So with all of that said, hi, Laura. How are you? Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you, Ashley. Oh, my goodness. What an honor. I'm definitely humbled to just be any guest, but be one of the first guests to be on. I feel very, very humbled, very lucky. And yeah, it's very special to be here with you.
I cannot be more excited to have you as our first guest for sure. But yeah, we can just get right into it. Can you tell us a little bit more about what or who East Yard is and the kind of work that you are involved in?
Yeah, I love talking about East Yard. So East Yard started in 2001, really because of the rail yard impacts that we were seeing in the Commerce East LA neighborhoods. If y'all are in these hoods, y'all already know that the rail yards and the freeways are literally what divides these hoods, right? I think it's important for us as a younger generation who have always known these rail yards, who have always known these freeways, to understand that prior to the 50s, these were Japanese gardens, right? These were communities that didn't have these things. And so our community members have been grounded on, like, we have these health impacts that we know are caused by these polluters who are not working really to solve any of these health issues. And so we were just like, we have to organize ourselves. And so folks before us have been working on this for many a decades. Around the same time, the 710 freeway widening proposal also came out around 2001, 2002. So we've been working on that. And now we have the Commerce Office. We have an office in Long Beach. We work on everything from water pollution to soil pollution to air quality. And we do all of that focused on, like, member engagement, having fun, but also, like, learning, being critical, and doing what we do best, right, which is fight. We fight for our communities. It's not something that we should have to do, but it's where we're at. And if we're going to do that, we're going to do that building community, making friends, right? I think so. To transition to that second part, I came into the organization about 5 or 6 years ago as an organizer. Before that, I was organizing in Long Beach and wanted to come back and organize in my hood, right? You mentioned I've lived in Bell Gardens my whole life. And to know that East Yard organized in Bell Gardens, when I found that out, I was like, I have to be a member now. So I became a member, then began organizing in the Southeast East LA area. And we have other dope organizers in Long Beach. And yeah, have focused on the 710 freeway project, have focused on other air quality projects, parks projects, things of that nature. Now I'm still organizing one area in our communities, which is the neighborhoods in Southeast, which is the neighborhoods of Lake Bell, Bell Gardens, Kurehe HP. And then we have other really, really dope organizers that I'm sure will come up later that organize the other areas. But then I'm also the co-executive director of the org, right? Which is, it's not the fancy, nice work on the ground, but it's what needs to happen to make sure, like, we pay the bills, we're getting our people paid, we're getting the work done, we're getting these grants, right? We do recognize that we're part of the nonprofit industrial complex. And that doesn't solve all the issues, right? But we use it as a tool to make sure that we can create community leadership so that one day when we don't have this complex, or one day when East Yard doesn't exist, that we're still doing the work, that we've built that connections, that community cohesiveness, and just beautiful relationships. As an organizer, I'm very, very happy to say that most of the members that I organize with are my homies. We're friends. We grab coffee the way we're grabbing coffee right now. And that's a beautiful thing to see. So, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that make me appreciate East Yard so much, not only that they employed me during two tough times in my life where everyone was shutting their door on me, is how y'all really prioritize community. Because like you said, a lot of these nonprofits, they do more of telling communities what to do instead of actually listening to them and working with them. So why do you think in doing this work, it is important to prioritize communities and folks on the ground?
Yeah, I think we know as a community, right? And I say we as a community resident in Southeast Los Angeles, which Southeast, if y'all live in Southeast, y'all know, right? This the fact that this podcast is even happening, I'm so honored to like have a role, because I'm just like, oh, this is a Southeast LA thing. And y'all know we don't get our stars, our praises. We do a lot of work in the Southeast. You know, we have a lot of great people, a lot of great leaders in the Southeast who have gone on to do great things. And so I think to talk about it more, to share space, to share that more, to create the spaces to share that more, I think that's really what I found in East Yard that it allows us to do, not just for environmental justice, right? Because that's one issue in like all the social justice issues that we have, right? But listening to community, we are the experts, right? We have talented folks who understand what needs to happen in our communities. But sometimes folks don't listen, you know? Or sometimes folks are impacted by like this greater capitalist society. And what I hear often in many realms is just like, oh yeah, but let's settle for these crumbs. They don't say it like that. I say it like that. Let's settle for these crumbs. Because that's what they're offering, right? This larger system. This is what it's offering. It's offering this little part of the solution. And that's not it. And so I think to build community is to create equity. It is to take away power from these larger systems. To build power in our own, right? Whether or not it's given to us. Whether we have to take it or not. And so that's why I think community building and community relations is so important.
Definitely. And how would you describe Southeast LA to someone who is not from LA or even California?
Yeah, that's I'm going to answer that, and I'm going to answer how I would describe it to someone from Southeast LA, because I think even that can be contentious or challenging, is what is Southeast LA? So I think from an outside perspective, or like for folks outside of this region, I would describe Southeast as a group of smaller cities who are between East LA and Long Beach. That's literally, because that's what people know. People know East LA or downtown. People know Long Beach. And so like, it's a group of cities that are in between those two areas. And then I would also, if they have some reference point, and along the 710 freeway on either side. That's typically how I describe Southeast cities. For us folks who are in the Southeast, what I might say might be controversial, and I'm here for it. Let's talk about it. Is for me, Southeast LA includes those areas like Bell Gardens, Kurehe, Commerce. Some people don't consider Commerce Southeast. I would. It's the Linwood, Southgate, Paramount, Compton. Compton's another one where some people are like, oh, no, it's not Compton. But I'm just saying, Compton is. It's right up against the 710. And I think they definitely don't get all their like love either because of the rap, right? That like Commerce has as an industrial city, that Compton has around the criminalization of folks, that folks don't want to be associated with those cities in particular as part of the Southeast. So I'm like, nah, that's still the Southeast. So that's how I would describe the Southeast region. Yeah.
Something that I've seen happen a lot more lately is community organizers reference Southeast LA as Cela. But, you know, not everyone in the community really call it Cela. How do you feel about that acronym that's being used to identify this region?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've definitely had that happen too, where people don't understand what Southeast means. I think it's a great term. And the reason that I really enjoy this term is because it really unifies a lot of the Southeast cities have a lot of the same issues. I think there is a variance between like the bigger Southeast cities and the smaller Southeast cities, which to me means like your Bell Gardens, Cudahy, Commerce. I think those cities are like the smaller cities, have fewer resources. There's the larger ones, which I would consider Southgate and Linwood as an example. But regardless, we have a population that is very similar in demographically. I think geographically, clearly, we're together. And then resource-wise, I think we also are very similar. And so I do think this could serve to unify us as a community. That's how I see it. It's like we're all part of the same Southeast Los Angeles. When I'm talking to people, definitely I do my best to never say Cela. I always do my best to say like Southeast Los Angeles, which includes that's I can name all the cities like from the jump real quick, because I've gotten used to like Southeast LA, which includes, and then I name them because clearly, not everybody's on the same page of what is Cela. And two, because a lot of folks, you know, our elders, our, you know, even our young people, if you're not in the right spaces, you know, don't know this term.
What was it like growing up in Bell Gardens for you?
For a short time, I lived by the railroad tracks that divide Bell Gardens and Southgate. That was cool. I went to Bell Gardens Elementary. I went to Bell Gardens Intermediate. I went to Bell Gardens High School. When I turned about 10, I moved close to Ford Park, and that was amazing. Being close to a park is definitely a privilege that I didn't realize I had until I started going to my friends' homes who live in like East LA, and there's only cemeteries as green space. And so I was like, oh, I am a little privileged. Okay. And so I've definitely really enjoyed Ford Park in Bell Gardens is definitely a highlight for me. They call Parque de los Patos, right, where the ducks are at. I think Bell Gardens is very lucky in that we have two beautiful rivers and bodies of water around us. We have the Rio Hondo, which is the one I'm closest to. And there's the LA River on the other side of Bell Gardens. So we're one of the few cities that have the benefit of both rios. And yeah, but growing up in Bell Gardens, I think, was definitely tough in a way, just in terms, you know, we're all low-income communities. All of my family, all the families around me, right, we were first-gen migrants to this country. So I was born here, but my parents were not. And then, right, for a short time, the undocumented situation happened. And then right now we all have the ability to come and go from Mexico, but a lot of our families have that same issue. And so even though I was born here, I only spoke Spanish. I was a Spanish speaker first. So I was put in Spanish only classes, which I didn't realize. And then they had the program where like they forced you to take English, and that's how you learn English. So I did that. So that was interesting. I think part of why I became an interpreter was also because my Spanish is so good. I was able to support when young children would come to this country as migrants born in other countries. I often ended up being the person who would support the communication gaps, particularly when they were placed in English-only classes, which is wild to me. But that did happen. I think that definitely highlight, those are some of the like biggest memories that I have in terms of growing up there. I think in retrospect, I think I was with a tough crowd by choice. I was definitely part of like the gifted program and all that. I was part of AVID and opted out of AVID because, you know, I wanted to learn the hard way, which is cool. It happens. And so I'm definitely grateful for all the lessons I've learned, for the relationships I've built, but it was definitely tough. seeing a lot of folks, my folks in particular, end up in jail, end up pregnant. We have a whole pregnancy center in Bell Gardens High School for our pregnant mothers to hopefully continue their education and keep it moving, you know, which is critical to not just like pawn those folks off. And then we had, you know, everybody who failed at the regular school system ended up in Vail. Y'all know if you're from Southeast and y'all end up in Vail, y'all already know what went down. But yeah, so growing up in the Southeast was great. I loved it. I think now, as I'm reflecting on it, I'm just like, I loved it. It was cool. Yeah.
What are some misconceptions that people have about Bell Gardens and Seva?
There's definitely a misconception that we're all like criminals and on drugs. I think there's, part of why there's also this perception of like all the criminalization in Southeast is because we have a bunch of cops. We are like over policed in Bell Gardens and the Southeast. We are over policed. And so that gives the perception that we are criminals, right? They're just looking for a reason to pull us over to do that. And so I would say that that's the biggest misconception.
Something that I see a lot on social media and, you know, certain pages that publish news that happens in our community. In the comment section, it's wild. People say, oh, this is why we need gentrification, or like people in the community don't care about their making their own community look beautiful. But I don't believe that. I think that there are a lot of people in our community that care, that they want to get involved in one way or another, but it's difficult. You know, a lot of them are just trying to survive. A lot of them are, you know, working multiple jobs and don't have time to do a lot of this work.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would say that during COVID, that accentuated that. It didn't change anything. It just made everything worse. And this has been the case, right? Even with our amazing members who are trying to stay active, who are trying to be involved at East Yard, people got to work two jobs, right? People got ends to meet. And it's hard, and with gentrification, because of gentrification that these people, that some people are asking for, that's literally what's creating the harm. That's making it so our communities, our adults have to work harder. Our youth have unsupervised hours where they are not being plugged into like these activities that they could be learning because they have to take care of the household because of whatever. And so it is very much a system. That's a capitalist system that has created what we have now, the circumstances by which we're having to live and try our best to just survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talking about gentrification, I feel like this is something that's talked a lot about in organizing spaces in Sela. What does gentrification mean to you? And how do we balance bringing in resources and development that we very much need versus potential like displacement of people that have been living here for decades?
Yeah, that's a huge question, and one that I think about a lot, that is definitely at the center of East Yard's work, because gentrification to me is literally the displacement, or to not use big words, right, removing people from their homes because they can no longer afford them. This is passive violence. Also, I want to name that this is a form of like economic violence to allow for a more affluent community who has more money, who can afford to live there. So it's literally kicking people out. This is what redlining is made of historically, right? Where we were restricted to certain areas. Redlining, though theoretically, is no longer in practice, right? It's allegedly illegal. It's still completely happening through the economic system, right? We see that. I'm sure some folks who are listening to your podcast know somebody who moved to Moreno Valley, who moved to Paris, not Paris, France, you know, Paris, P-E-R-R-I-S, Lancaster, you know, who are moving to these other areas because they can't afford to live here. So that's what gentrification means to me. And it's a huge issue because there is money coming down to Sela actively. This is very time-based, right? So if you listen to this in 2 years, I don't know where we'll be. But right now, there's a lot of investments that are slated to come to the Southeast, particularly along the LA River. And when I say these projects, these include like parks and active space projects. There's I forgot the name of the park, but there's a park in Southgate that's getting developed, the Urban Orchard. There's the Cela Cultural Center. There's also a bunch of developments around housing, right? So there's all of these things happening, and we deserve good spaces. We deserve park space. But what we don't deserve is for our community who has lived here to be displaced. And I want to name that there's a huge issue, concern for me around, and for other folks, I'm sure as well, around social capital, right? And social capital is two fancy words that really mean like we have tight communities, right? And in Southeast, we have tight communities, right? A lot of, I don't, but I don't have a lot of family here in the Southeast. My family are my friends and a lot of the East Yard members. Shout out to our East Yard members. But for a lot of folks, it is like my tia lives in Cudahy. Right, I live in HP. My cousin lives in Bell, right? So that is social capital, right? You have people to rely on. You have a community system. You have your friends that you grew up in. Not you're getting displaced. You're gonna move to somewhere where nobody's there for you, right? And that is huge issue, particularly when a lot of times we're relying on some of our elders to help us support with caring for our children, to picking up our children from school. And so I wanted to name that as a huge issue around gentrification. And going back to, right, these investments that are going to come in. For me and for East Yard, we've never been against developing these beautiful spaces, right? The issue becomes you're not putting you, the proverbial you, which I'll get into later, are not investing in the policies necessary to protect our existing communities. Right. So I'm talking about rent control. I'm talking about tenant protections. I'm talking about affordable housing that's not just 4 units in a 50 unit spot, right, that are affordable. And affordable is measured as like low income when we know that nobody has low income money anymore based on the threshold set by the state. Right. It's like we are very low income or below at this point with inflation happening here. And so it is very, very important that we recognize, yes, we deserve those investments, but we also deserve the protections so that our people can stay here.
The work that we do, this community organizing, sometimes can be a thankless job. You go to all these public meetings, read all these government documents filled with jargon, write all these extensive public comments, and it could be draining. Some people don't know that you're involved in this work, and not that we're expecting a thank you, but it can be very draining and it can burn you out very quickly. So how do you keep yourself going and continue doing this work?
Before I answer that, I wanted to, because I realized that I don't know what demographic you're appealing to here, but I'm like, folks may not understand what community organizing is. Organizing can look many, many different ways. It's not about organizing files, just so you know. That's what I first thought when I found out about community organizing. But it's literally building relationships among people. It could be around a certain issue, around a certain geographical area, right? There's community-based organizations that may focus on immigrant justice, right? And so they're organizing immigrants. And so that's literally means like immigrants from different areas that are in this one region. And organizing means creating a baseline education, finding out what the issues are in that community or for those folks, and then creating a change based on that, right? I'm very lucky that at East Yard, we're all homies, we're all friends. My members are my friends, right? There is no hierarchy, right? That's how we like to keep it at East Yard. And we all just pitch in. I operate from a place of transparency for the most part, as hard as that is. And what I mean by that is it's easier to carry the burden for you and for everybody else, right? It's easy to be like, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. And so something that I've been working on is being more transparent because when I share with members or with my core organizers that there are issues around I can't get to this because I'm super busy with this other thing. Or yeah, or even with members, right? Because there's so many issues in Southeast Los Angeles, right? As an example, the West Santa Ana branch is a light rail project that's coming to Southeast Los Angeles. It borders Cudahy Southgate and is close to the Azalea, if folks know that area. And for that area, it has potential. It's a light rail. We do not have light rail in Southeast Los Angeles. The closest station to me is the Blue Line over by Florence Firestone neighborhood off of Florence and Roosevelt Park. And so to have something here would be really cool that we could take the train and not have to drive everywhere. But the issue is that there's already so much traffic. If y'all have pulled up to Atlantic and Firestone, y'all have seen the backed up traffic with trucks, with cars. And so the concern when the environmental impact report was released was that there would be significant and unavoidable traffic impacts to that area. And they're moving forward with that project. And that's problematic. Do I want that in my community? Going back to the investments piece, yes, I do want that in my community. But at the expense of what? Like, the neighborhoods there are just going to be so impacted with traffic that is it really going to benefit the community? And so we engaged in it somewhat. I definitely didn't have the capacity to engage in it the way I wanted to. I still don't, to be real, because I'm working on other projects. And so to get back to the question of what does it look like to be sustainable in that work, for me, the transparency part is naming to members like, hey, this project is happening, but I just don't have the capacity to do it. But I wanted to name it for y'all, but we can't do it. Or I can't do it, right? Or there's also this false expectation that we need to do it all. Not necessarily, right? One of the biggest things that I feel like has been growth for East Yard has been that maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, we started creating member groups to read these very technical analyses. If y'all know about technical analyses, right, specifically looking at EIRs, environmental impact reports. If you don't worry about it. But they're very technical reports, right, that only typically like city officials read, consultants read. But they impact if projects get approved or not. And so they have huge impacts in our community. And so to have community members read it, struggle through it, have meetings together to learn it, that's beautiful. To have those moments of collectively, because yo también, you know, sometimes yo estoy perdida, you know. So to have those moments collectively to, oh, we get it now. I don't have all the answers, right? And so there's some members who will tell me, this is what it is. And I'm like, you're so smart. Now I understand. And I think that to me is the part where we try our best to avoid the burnout and be sustainable, is sharing when there are struggles, not making assumptions about what we can do collectively, and also name it if we can't do it. It doesn't mean it's not a struggle for me, right? That doesn't mean it's not a struggle for other folks, right? Definitely capacity is still an issue. I still want to do it all, but to be sustainable in this work, naming that is a practice that every day we try, and I think I'm getting better at it. I hope so.
What are some actions that people maybe listening now can take in their own communities to try and make a difference? Maybe they're not involved and want to start getting involved. What are some small steps folks can be taking?
Thank you for asking this. You can definitely come to East Yard. That's my first answer, obviously. You can hit us up on IG, on Facebook, on Twitter. I try my best to check the IG all the time. We're pretty active on the IG. So at EYCEJ, if you want to jump in and ask, like, how can I jump into the meetings? Our meetings, some of them are virtual, some of them are in person, some of them are hybrid. And we have different meetings for different areas. The reason we have different meetings for different areas is because it's so big. Like, even for the Southeast cities, we have two different groups that meet, because there's so many cities that all have local issues and we want to try to address those. That's why we have such meetings. And so we do have those. We're not out here promoting them all the time on the socials because we have folks who are not in our region. But yeah, if you're listening, you're from East LA, Boyle Heights, any of the Southeast cities, Long Beach, yeah, hit us up, let us know. And to us, there's no membership fee or nothing like that. It's just show up to the meetings, listen up, participate. Everybody's an expert in their own community. We really, really, truly live by that. And then on top of that, we have a lot of committees that form out of like interest. So if you're interested in water, we have a water committee. If you're interested in zero waste, right, and not throwing trash away, we have a committee for that. The 710, we have a committee for that. So that's where we do. We have housing groups as well, and we organize around housing. And so I think if you're not, whether or not you're participating with East Yard, I think something that's really important that a lot of folks should all have the experience to do is give public comment. I think giving public comment makes people super nervous, and I understand that. Public comment means you go to your local city or your local air quality agency to make a comment about a concern that you have and offer a solution, ideally. If you don't have a solution, that's okay. But if you have a solution, pitch that, right? And so doing public comment is so important because most of the times, these council chambers, there's very little people that come to council meetings. And so if you think about you're organizing around one issue and you can come and bring five friends to talk about the same issue, the council is going to have to listen to you, right? Whether or not they like you or not, we'll figure that out. But they have to listen. And so I think that is what organizing is about. It's about learning how to advocate for yourself. And so I definitely encourage folks to try doing public comment. If you mess it up, no one's going to remember tomorrow, to be real. And if you do a great job, like, what's going to happen? Things are going to change in the way that you want them to. There you go. There's no lose-lose to that. And so I think that's really important to name because public comment or engaging can be overwhelming. We do practice with folks at East Yard. We're like, all right, write your comment down. Let's practice in pairs so you feel comfortable doing that. That's something that we definitely work on. And there's a multitude of issues, right? We partner with our sister organization, also Caracol, which is a renters autonomous collective, which I want to plug as well, which is focused on housing specifically in the Southeast cities. And so we definitely, if you're interested in that, let me know or let Ashley know. We could figure this out. We'll figure this out so we can plug you into those monthly meetings that come with actions to focus on housing and tenants for housing and a renter specifically. I want to say, if you want to plug in, whatever you have to offer to the movement work is valid, right? If you're a cook, right? We need good food in the movement. Like, we need that. If you're good at numbers, right? We need people to do budgets in the movement. You know, if you're a good reader, if you like to read research, we need that in the movement, right? Every value and skill and asset is literally building into this movement. And when I mean movement, I mean this community that we're building. Whatever we want to see as our community, somewhere that's safe, somewhere where our kids could walk around without having to worry and play soccer in the street like they used to. That's the kind of community that we want to build.
Something that I love at East Yard is La Cosecha Colectiva. Can you explain a little bit about what La Cosecha Colectiva is?
Yeah, for sure. La Cosecha Colectiva is a decentralized garden program. And what that means is that, well, let me go why we created La Cosecha. La Cosecha Colectiva started for two reasons. One, there was a proposed Walmart development in the city of Commerce years ago. But that proposed development was an issue because it wasn't just going to be the store. They wanted to put a huge warehouse behind it. And they were going to increase truck traffic through our communities in the city of Commerce. But the contentious part was Commerce doesn't have grocery stores. And so people in Commerce community were just like, well, I don't want Walmart, but I need these groceries. And I'm not trying to go all the way to Bell Gardens. That's far for some folks to go to the Food for Less, right? And a lot of times, like, there isn't El Super in, like, the Commerce East LA border. But a lot of that fruits and or produce is rotting on the shelves, you know? And so you're having to go and then go back in 2 days, right? And so that's a whole other issue around, like, how things are sorted, because that is very systematic that we have rotting produce on our shelves. But to that point, so we had that. So we were like, okay, let's start a community garden, right? We could grow our own food. We have historical ancestral knowledge from a lot of our elders, all that. We tried to do a community garden at a school right behind our office. And the school was like, sure, of course you can. All you got to do is pay like $5,000 a year and you can't use it in the summers. And we're like, what? That's wild. Oh, that doesn't make sense. So that was not viable. And then we're like, cool, let's grow out of our homes, right? People who have the ability to grow and have, you know, property or soil or whatever can grow there. Folks who don't, we can provide raised garden beds for, that they could grow outside their apartments. That worked for the most part, other than the folks who have property were also contaminated by Exide lead. And so we had to provide garden boxes for everybody with clean soil for folks to grow. And so people grow out of their homes and then share produce. The idea being, particularly for trees, I'm like, there's more than enough produce to go around, right? So let's share that. Let's build those connections. And that's beautiful. So it comes out of environmental justice, but it's really a beautiful program that not only highlights the wealth of knowledge of some of our elders or folks who have come from a farm and farming and growing on land. And reconnecting us, myself as, you know, the younger generation who has no knowledge of that, and entrusting us with that knowledge is super powerful. And it makes our elders feel valuable, right? It creates that connection, that intergenerational connection that we so desperately need and crave. But then also we're learning a straight up survival tool, right? When everything goes to hell, when like systems crash, we have each other because we've built the systems, and we have this knowledge of respecting the land and the land giving back to us, which is extremely powerful. And it was seen during COVID. There was dispensaban comida. There was food given out, but the food was like dry food. So like your dried beans, your rice, your oatmeal, like that type of thing. But there wasn't fresh produce. A lot of folks have integrated fresh produce now because we were so vocal on it. Many folks were vocal on it. But during that time, La Cosecha Colectiva was able to put boxes together from the network that we had to redistribute to our members who just didn't have, right? And a lot of the folks who didn't have is because they were undocumented and therefore out of a job and unable to collect the unemployment, right? Because when you're undocumented, you can't apply for that. But these are hardworking folks who just didn't have it, or were fired, laid off, or didn't have money because of they were impacted directly by COVID, right? And so I think that's one example of La Cosecha Colectiva, but it's a beautiful program. We do from growing and harvesting to workshops around like medicinal plants, to food cooking demonstrations.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you for having me. To many more dope episodes.
Of course. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening.